Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin, and helping you maneuver through this waning dystopia, it's episode number 372 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Crap Bag has the latest big sports figure to get COVID. At 12:25, the great J.D. Lewis helps us get ready for the fantasy football weekend, with playoffs looming in just a couple weeks. And in mere minutes, Notre Dame finds Brian Kelly's replacement from within. I'm Trey Elling. Behind the glass today is a guy who can talk hoops, sports, music, and a whole lot more. They call him Zay on the morning show. It is Isaiah Collier. Zay, how you doing today?
Pretty good, Trey. Sad you don't look like a bootleg Eminem from 8 Mile like you did during the Kansas State game.
Wait a second, what?
It was well done. Well done.
That just went over my head. We're going to have to get an explanation here in a second. And sitting across from me is a Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings.
Ah, you damn right. It is December 2nd, so Kansas State, the pregame early in the morning. Trey shows up.
Oh, yeah.
Trey shows up.
Okay.
I look over and I see this person. And all I could think of was, that's the artist rendering for like every creepy guy that's terrorizing someone in the Midwest or in the West or in New York. Or it just, when you have that drawing of dude with, you know, usually there's a hoodie involved, there's a cap involved, and then there's aviator style sunglasses. That guy, right? Well, 20 minutes after the bomb went off, officer, I saw that guy walk away. Can you describe him? Yes, I can. That's what you look like to me. Isaiah's giving you the Eminem 8 Mile love.
What was the exact phrasing there?
Bootleg non-rapping Eminem from 8 Mile.
You don't know he can't rap. You don't know for sure.
This is when he was yakking in the bathroom because he was nervous. Comes home, mom's being banged by homie that he went to high school with. That's the version of him that I saw on Trey when UT
by the way,
held it down.
Best trick that movie played is trying to convince us all Kim Basinger was ugly. That's a tough thing to pull off.
Why do I not remember her in that movie?
She's his mom.
Oh, yeah.
They were trying to make us think she was somehow down and out. Like, oh, that's tough. That's Kim Basinger, man.
Well done, Zay. I think given the opportunity, I might be able to flow a little bit better than you're giving me credit for, but still, big points there for that.
Won't the real T. Elling please stand up?
You guys think that's creepy? Doing so when it's unexpectedly cold before a football game? You should see me watching movies by myself in a theater. Because it's the same setup minus the aviators.
Come on, dude.
With the hood over my head. Because I don't want to be distracted by anything going on around me.
Like police officers?
And I
security guards?
And I slump down in my seat.
Oh, that helps.
And then I put my hands under the bottom of my hoodie. And I'm just kind of moving them up and down. Whatever the movie is. The movie doesn't matter. I'm just doing that because that's kind of my nervous habit when I'm watching movies. Like to be entertained by things.
Pardon me, Mr. Rubens. Can we talk to you outside, please?
There's a bit of a Pee Wee Herman vibe to that, you're right.
Excuse me, Mr. Oswald, we have some questions for you.
But I don't want to hear you eating your milk duds, so I can't put headphones on because then I can't hear the movie. So what I do is I throw the hood up. That way I'm hearing less of you next to me.
Oh, can you imagine you're sitting down to watch a movie and creepy dude in a hood and with Trey Elling underneath it is sitting two seats away?
I've also covered a couple movies recently, like gone to premieres where I'm speaking with directors or actors afterwards.
Right.
And so in doing that, I'm given a little bit of leeway in terms of taking notes, which I'm doing on my phone, but I don't want that to be a huge distraction. So I'll actually put the cell phone under my zipped hoodie and I'll stick my head into the hoodie at parts during the movie. And then, I'm having to go up and down with the bottom of the hoodie a little bit because I'm like trying to get the right typing and I'm trying to take the right notes and I'm having to delete sometimes. It probably doesn't look good because I'm there as credentialed media, but at the same time, I'm just trying to do my job.
All right, I'm just going to double check with Isaiah on something real quick. Isaiah, I enjoyed your comment about Trey. This isn't like some kind of work that Trey set up because he wanted to do this bit about the hoodie, is it? You didn't.
I don't
set
know
him
where
up.
This went.
Okay, all right.
This went on a different route than I thought it was going to go. Not going to lie.
I just want to make sure you have no responsibility here. Look, I'm just trying to clear you of all responsibility.
Look, sometimes I'll radio something. I'll exaggerate it a little bit because I know it makes it more entertaining. I'm not exaggerating anything that I'm telling you guys right now.
Okay.
This is really what has been happening at movie premieres where I am credentialed media who is about to talk to a director or actor afterwards.
No, that's all right. That's you gotta do what you gotta do.
As a matter of fact, next week we may be playing a conversation with the award-winning film director, filmmaker, Sean Baker, who's got a new movie coming out about Simon Rex playing an aging porn star who returns home to Texas, and he's got a really bad reputation around town. It's a fantastic movie, great dark comedy, and Sean Baker's the guy behind The Florida Project, Tangerine. He's done a couple of other things that people know as well, and this is maybe his best work yet. When Simon Rex, out of nowhere, puts on an incredible performance.
That is a name-dropping way to start the show. I like that. Let's drop some more names on him, because Trey interviewed Bob Saget. Part 3 of that interview comes up at 2 o'clock today, starting with the Dave Coulier question.
That's where it starts.
You start by asking him about Coulier and the Alanis Morissette thing.
And Bob Saget gives a more complete answer to that question than Alanis Morissette does in the excellent HBO documentary about her that came out in the last couple weeks.
That is at 2:05.
Her answer's okay. His answer is what I believe going forward.
I can't wait. All right. At 1 o'clock, our normal Thursday conversation, getting ahead of myself, with Paul Wadlington, Scipio Tex of Inside Texas and On3.com. And coming up at 12:25, like Trey said, we're going to try to help your fantasy team. Yes, we will deal with the Tent City Hobos. Where are you right now? You going to make the playoffs?
Free fall. I'm going to make the playoffs because I was so good the first half of the season, but it's gotten ugly recently. I lost Derrick Henry, and unfortunately, I made a really bad deal a couple weeks ago where I gave up Deebo Samuel for A.J. Brown. Even though Deebo Samuel is now hurt for the next couple of weeks, had I had him the last 3 weeks, which is when I gave him up, I would have won two of those three games. Instead, I had A.J. Brown, who sucked the first week and is now on IR. And he's on IR for two more games. After their bye, he has to miss two more games.
There's a lot of reasons that fantasy football would sting for me if I had to play it. Deebo Samuel would be one of those. If I got rid of him and then he gets like 1,000 touches the next 2 weeks.
So I was concerned. Yeah, exactly. Well, he hadn't gotten all the running back touches at that point. As a matter, like, they're not even throwing to him in the last couple of games, but he's still incredibly productive because he's getting the ball to the backfield and making big things happen.
Goes 50 yards a carry, it feels like.
Right, exactly. But yeah, that one hurt. But hey, still got to figure out a way to patchwork all of this together, to MacGyver this team together, to figure something out to get myself in the playoffs, because once you get into the postseason, Chad, just like in sports, anything can happen.
That is right. That's why we have postseason. All right, so that's coming up at 12:25. Get your questions in right now. Specs text line 337-3776. Speaking of specs, let's get you our spec set piece, and this will explain why it's a little different at this school.
The Specs Set Piece is brought to you by Specs Wine, Spirits, and Finer Foods. The biggest saves of the match start at Specs, official partner of Austin FC. Specs, the fun starts here.
Not every school can say what I'm about to say about Notre Dame. So let's start with a quick coaching update. We said yesterday that the thought was one of the possibilities for Notre Dame moving forward from Brian Kelly was Marcus Freeman. And remember, he was the DC at Cincinnati. He went to Notre Dame, ironically, instead of going to Florida State, LSU last year. Other places were interested in him. He was the big DC get. We talked about him around here, Trey. Was Sark going to grab him? Marcus Freeman was highly sought after. Now, apparently the players want Marcus Freeman, the folks at Notre Dame want Marcus Freeman, and the reports are that he will be the next head coach. They're also going to get to keep the OC because Tommy Rees has told him he wants to stay. He told the team that, I think last night, he announced to the team that he'll be staying. So they're trying to keep everything stable. Now, here's why I say Notre Dame is different than every other school, Trey. The great detail. Nothing can be finalized with Marcus Freeman until the, I don't know if it's the president, the chancellor, or whatever, of the school, who happens to be a high-level priest, Father Murphy, I think is his name. They got to get him back from the Vatican because he's been seeing the Pope.
What?
Yeah.
So oh, my gosh.
He's been having an audience with the Pope, so they had to get communication to him, send word to the Vatican, yo, man, can you get back to South Bend as quickly as possible, because we got to get you to sign off on our new head football coach.
Good Lord.
That's a different school there in South Bend, in case y'all don't know.
Yes, it is, and this has got to be the youngest Notre Dame has gone in the modern era for its head coach. At 35 years old.
Got to be.
Only been coaching at the coordinator level. Within mm-hmm. the Power Five, or technically Power Five, I know Notre Dame is conference-less, for a year.
Even when they went with Jerry Faust back in the day, who had been a high school coach, I believe he'd been a high school head coach.
Right.
And Freeman's not that.
He's not that. And things started out shaky at the beginning of the year, but he's helped turn the defensive performance around. He's really rejuvenated what they're doing recruiting-wise and taking bigger swings at higher priority recruits and actually landing some of those at times. And I think most importantly here, he's allowing some cohesion to occur between what Brian Kelly had and what Notre Dame is going to do in the future. The fact that Tommy Rees is sticking around is a big deal. There were questions about whether or not he could be the guy, the play caller, when he was elevated to that term on an interim basis a couple bowl games ago, and he's proven up to the task. So the fact that he's going to still be around to call the offense, you now have the same guy calling defensive plays who will obviously still be there doing that while also taking care of head coaching duties, keeps us from seeing what's happening in Norman happen in South Bend now as well.
Yeah, I think that's good to compare the two, because and also to keep in mind for those Notre Dame people, and if you're following this, Rees and Freeman, apparently Kelly wanted both.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly was going to try to take both of them with him to Baton Rouge.
Of course he did.
So the fact that they're staying does speak to that stability. And I know people have wanted to compare these two stories. We had a great line yesterday from one of our guests about Oklahoma's guy leaves and he pisses off a state. Notre Dame's guy leaves and he pisses off a whole religion. I think it was Justin Wells that said that. And it's true. But now I would turn it around to this comparison. It feels like some of the big names in at Oklahoma's football program are saying, hey, man, I came here for Lincoln Riley. I didn't come here for Oklahoma alone.
Right.
But so far, it also feels like in South Bend, there are some big-time football guys saying, hey, this is Notre Dame. I came here to play football at Notre Dame. I came here for that sign and that tunnel and that building and this field and that helmet. That's why I'm here. This is Notre Dame. This is a special place. They're trying to figure out a way to keep that together for a while. This may be a horrible decision. It may eventually fall all apart and they got to go do another search. But right now, to me, this feels right for them. Try to keep together what you have, because you are different. You're different. You're special. You're unique. And to me, this is Notre Dame kind of being Notre Dame. It's sort of what they have to do.
100%. And Notre Dame has that luster as a school where Oklahoma does not. Texas has that luster as a school where Oklahoma is not. And I say that obviously understanding that Oklahoma is the better football program.
Oh, yeah.
Charlie Strong, for all the obvious missteps that he made here, he had some real gems of quotes along the way. Remember what he used to say about kids and the possibility of a kid having to stay at a school if the coach moves on in some capacity or is fired? He would always say back in the day, kids need to make this decision for the school that they're going to, not any one person that is at the school or within the program at mm-hmm. the time,
yeah.
And that includes the head coach. And I think that when you go to a Notre Dame, when you go to a Texas, that absolutely factors in if it's not the biggest deal. But at Oklahoma, yeah, it is much more about guys within the football program than anything else.
Right, and it's not, and that may not be the case for everybody at Oklahoma. Obviously, there's some guys that showed up for the tradition of that in the history. But when you have some of the biggest names automatically going, especially the kid, the Malachi, what's his name, Nelson, but that's also a Cali kid, and maybe there's some reasoning there. So there's still a blue blood quality at Oklahoma. You're just not feeling it as much right now as you are maybe from the Notre Dame thing.
The blue blooded quality comes from the program. It doesn't come from the school. That's my point. The school does some nice things.
I see what you're saying.
But
yeah,
the
yeah.
blue bloodedness of the school on the whole is not what Notre Dame or Texas is.
Yeah, no, that's fair. So, that's a little bit of a difference with Notre Dame. Got to wait for the guy to get back from hanging with the Pope to make it official for Marcus Freeman. But hopefully for Notre Dame fans, that will work out. Trey mentioned the age, 35 years old, a young coach, but it will stabilize, they hope, things there in South Bend. As we move on from something stable, how about something not stable? Major League Baseball. Just a quick update, Trey. Last night it became official that the owners are locking out the players. This is the first time I think that has technically happened since 90, And then the last time they had a work stoppage, of course, was the famous 94-95 time frame. If you're too young to remember that, Trey and I will tell you that when baseball makes a threat of, well, we may just not play, they ain't kidding. Because we had a season get completely severed, and they didn't have a World Series. They didn't have playoffs. They just said, that's it. You know who won the World Series in 94? Nobody did, because they didn't play. They just stopped. I remember it well. And Trey, it took them a while to dig out of that.
Yes, it did. What's the biggest reason why they are going through a work stoppage right now? What's the biggest sticking point?
I am hearing that it is all about core financial stuff. Players are trying to get more money sooner. You know about these tricks the owners use about putting a guy in minor leagues first.
Mm-hmm.
The terms of service, years of service. Chris Bryant and others have run into that. They want that fixed. They want certain things adjusted, and the owners will not hear about it. Yesterday's meetings, you want to hear about, talk about pettiness between millionaires and billionaires? Yesterday's meetings lasted 7 minutes.
Ooh.
Minutes.
Well, this is going to drag on for a while, isn't it?
It is. The Players Association brought up the idea of, hey, you know this whole thing about the terms of service or whatever? We want to get rid of that and talk about something else or talk about a different version of it. And the owners said, nope, and they left. And then it was players were seen with their luggage getting out of town. And by the way, that town was Dallas. They were in Dallas at the Four Seasons, did I read correctly?
Very few better towns to talk money in.
Yeah, well, we know, and that's also where a lot of sports get together because of the airport situation, hotel situation. It's a good place to do that. CFP committee this week, they always meet there.
Very central, and it's better than Kansas City.
Yeah, there you go. So for you and me, Rangers fans who are excited about all this money they're spending and being more relevant and Corey Seager and all that, for the where did he just end up? For the Mets fans that are interested about, ooh, Max Scherzer's going to pitch for us? Yeah, at some point, I guess, but we're going to have to wait on it. You can't do free agency now. You can't trade anybody right now, which might explain, Trey, why we saw that big push in the last couple of weeks, because players and, most importantly, the Scott Borises of the world, they all knew it was coming. They all knew this was about to happen, so they wanted to push through deals as fast as they could. And so now you got all this money kind of floating in, nowhere.
Perpetuity, yeah. Look, Major League Baseball players make stupid money, so it's hard for me to sympathize with these guys who weren't satisfied with the luxury tax bump that was being offered up by the owners. One of the biggest issues for me is how quickly these guys are able to get to free agency or able to get to the point where they can maximize their earning potential, because they do have, they being the owners in Major League Baseball, has such control over these guys in the minor leagues. Now, they've started to reform how much money is going into the minor leagues, thankfully, and how much those guys are getting paid. It's a step in the right direction, still not enough. But once these guys become big leaguers, established as big leaguers, yeah, I'm sorry. You need to let them get to that point where they can make that first big-time contract.
Yeah, on one side of it, I completely agree with you. On the other side of it, I imagine what football players and football people think when they read a story like this and think, oh, cry me a river, because every cent is guaranteed in your world.
Look, I get that, and that's part of what I'm arguing about, is that the guaranteed cents for guys who have come out of the minors and are maybe all-star caliber players but still making a pittance of what some of their teammates are making, that's kind of BS.
Those should be more right away.
You need
right.
to be able yeah. to get to that point a lot quicker. Now, some teams, to their credit, have decided to say, look, we see that you're not going to get to the point of salary arbitration for however many more years, but we want to make sure to pay you for how good you are right now. So we're going to pay you for this, and we're going to skip out on a couple of years of arbitration, but you can start earning now. Yeah. That needs to be the standard versus a one-off that occasionally franchises will pull.
Hopefully they'll be able to figure this out, because baseball in some regards is in a really good spot right now when it comes to competitive balance, young talent, some really exciting players throughout the league right now. Hopefully they don't drag down and not have a season, especially you came off of a COVID situation. And you're about to ask your fans to kind of come back and enjoy baseball again. And then you did it in the spring of 21. And they just went through another season, and you had your cool stories, develop it again and get fans back in the stands. And now you're going to do this to them?
I don't remember the last full baseball game I watched. It may have been 2018, 2017. Mm. I may watch some this year because it looks like the Rangers are going to be better.
Yeah.
Not going to be an utter embarrassment. But at the same time, the sport on the whole has a lot of problems right now.
It definitely does. We'll keep our eyes on that story. Also coming up, your fantasy football assistants. We do need to talk about that new NIL deal that the Longhorns have put together. They're trying to get on the forefront of the NIL discussion. We'll get into that. Coming up into Crab Bag, I'll tell you about another big sports name that got COVID and how they're doing with COVID. Up next, though, it is fantasy football. Get those questions to us, 337-3776. J.D. Lewis, trying to help your fantasy team, Trey's fantasy team, and ultimately his own fantasy teams. Coming up on The Horn.
I want to thank you because you made me that much stronger. When I thought I knew you again, that's
who was Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. Come on! Get them! I just love her attitude, man. Love it. Every time I hear Christina Aguilera, my face gets ugly. Especially a song like this. Listen to her, Trey. Listen to this attitude. She's telling him. Makes her stronger. She's a fighter.
Legitimately thought this was Carrie Underwood at first.
Oh, how dare you. How dare you. Come on, Christina. Oh. Oh, come on now. Christina Aguilera, cool, spooky, white chick. Isaiah Collier will bring you some cool, spooky white chicks when he's producing.
That.
Good stuff. Christina Aguilera, and like I've said, just like Luther, just like Adele, any size, don't care. Any size, any shape. Whatever you're into, Christina, at that particular moment, I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm a fan. All right. We got Paul Wadlington coming up at 1:05. We got the last part of Trey's interview with Bob Saget coming up at 2:05. But right now, we're going to try to help everybody's fantasy team. Yes, even Trey's. Let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline and bring in J.D. Lewis to talk some fantasy. J.D., how are you?
Great, guys. How are y'all?
Man, we're doing good. Doing good. How are your fantasy teams looking as we head towards the playoffs?
I would tell you that of my eight leagues, seven are in pretty good shape, and one is kind of in dire straits. You know, one of those where we're like fourth in scoring, but you know, basically we're like a 2% chance to make the playoffs. We got to have two pretty good weeks here. Thankfully, we've got an extra week during the regular season to try to make up that ground, but it's unlikely. And unfortunately, that league consists of about 50% of my exposure to buy-ins in fantasy football, so it can. One league can swing me, and it's swinging me in the wrong direction right now.
Gotcha.
Hey, JD, I don't know if you saw this chart that Matthew Berry emailed out within the last couple of days, but how crazy is it that most of the picks from the first couple of rounds of this year's fantasy draft aren't able to help their teams out right now?
Yeah, it's funny that you saw that from Matthew Berry, but the guy that actually put that out was, I can't remember his name exactly, but he's one of the guys that's in the I think the RotoViz kind of community or whatever, the Roto community. And so, but that is interesting because you look at basically the top 15 running backs drafted in fantasy, and of those, you know, 15 or 20, three guys are league winners. And it was what? Jonathan Taylor, Joe Mixon, and Najee Harris. And aside from that, everyone's either been hurt on the IR, missed five games, just now coming back. And so pretty fascinating, information to see and almost kind of leads you. Everybody's so running back heavy early on because they got to get that running back. But the reality is, for the most part, running backs, especially first round running backs, usually only have about a 40 or 50% hit rate just because it's such a violent position to play. And there's always going to be injuries, and you get guys like D'Ernest Johnson that can step up when Chubb and Hunt are out on a good running team and give you RB1 weeks for 2 weeks in a row. I mean, that kind of stuff is impressive to see. And you can always find that. It's just, you know, when you really need it, it's hard to find. So people have a tendency to go towards running back early. But the reality is you're probably better off getting yourself a stud tight end and getting yourself a stud receiver that you know is going to be, you know, consistent, like a Davante Adams, and kind of filling in the you know, plugging the holes later in the round with a volume of running backs versus trying to get quality just because it's such a hard position to keep healthy.
Yep. Well, despite the fact that I have Joe Mixon, my team is an utter mess right now, JD. I made a bad trade a couple weeks ago. A.J. Brown, I thought he'd see an increase in targets because Derrick Henry's out. he immediately gets hurt. Debo Samuel, who is now hurt as well, that I gave away, would have at least won me two of the last three games. Mm-hmm. And so I'm stuck having to pick Kendrick Bourne off the waiver pile to have a second wide receiver this week because DJ Moore is on bye. And I've got some serious questions about my two flex spots. Just as a reminder, it's a half PPR. So who should I go with here? Pick two between Tevin Coleman, Alex Collins, Matt Breida, and Tyler Boyd.
You sound so pumped.
So I guess you already have Clyde Edwards-Helaire in your starting lineup?
My starting running backs are okay. It's Joe Mixon and Daryl Henderson.
Gotcha. Okay, so you don't have Clyde this year. I guess I'm getting mixed up from your team last year. So in that case, the fascinating name that jumped out to me for the first one is going to be Matt Breida. I just think that he hadn't been on the field for a ton of snaps, but when he's been on the field, he's getting the ball. And I've always believed in the talent. He's just a breath away from an injury that knocks him out for the entire game. And so that's the risk that he's going to bring with him. But he's catching the ball. He's running the ball. Zach Moss has been a healthy scratch for Zach Breida or for Matt Breida to play. And so I like where that trend is going and think that I would jump on that and try to ride that a little bit and still a pretty high powered offense of the Buffalo Bills and going up against New England. They're going to do everything they can to stop Steph Diggs. And I think that's going to open up some running lanes and even some receiving lanes for Matt Breida. So I would go with him as your number one. And just after what I saw from Tevin Coleman last week, I like him more than Alex Collins. And Tyler Boyd just seems to be the number three, really maybe even number four option in Cincinnati behind, if you put Joe Mixon in that as well, and T. Higgins and Jamar Chase. And so I just, he could have a good game, but he could also have a really bad game. And I'd rather have the floor that a running back that's going to get goal line carries is going to give me. So Tevin Coleman would be my other, but you're right. I don't like any of those, or I don't love any of those. And you got to just kind of hope that you can catch some lightning in the bottle with some of those guys.
This is also a possibility, I guess, but it's more of a general question, too. Cortland Sutton is actually available in free agency in my league right now, in a lot of leagues for that matter, just because of how mediocre to bad he's been over the last 6 weeks or so. Do you think he's going to turn it around before the season's end?
That's an answer I don't have. My opinion on Cortland Sutton is a guy where if you want to stash him on your bench, that's one thing, but I would have a hard time even putting him in over a guy like Kendrick Bourne this week, just after what we've seen with Bourne. And I mean, the reality is in New England, there is no number one option, right? I mean, Bourne did what he did on basically like four catches, getting two touchdowns last week. And so you can't expect that every week. You can just really hope for 50, 60 yards and a touchdown. Anything more than that's going to be gravy, and anything less than that, you're a little disappointed, but it's not totally unexpected. And so, no, I don't love Cortland Sutton. I think there's enough there between Judy and Tim Patrick got an extension, and you've got Noah Fant, and that team still wants to run the ball and play defense with Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams. And so, if Cortland Sutton does have a good game, it's going to be, I think, more of a blip on the radar versus, oh, he's got it turned around and he's going to finish out this season strong. Of guys like that I actually like that could be available would be like an Allen Robinson, who's missed the last 3 weeks between, a bye and hamstring injury. And with Dalton hopefully playing quarterback this week, if Robinson is healthy and going, he's the kind of guy that I would then prefer maybe over a Kendrick Bourne. But, I don't have any idea if somebody's been smart enough to drop him in your league. He's available in most of mine.
Talking fantasy football with J.D. Lewis. All right, J.D., let's try to help the rest of the folks out. We'll start with this one. Got Aaron Rodgers on a bye. Need to start someone off waivers. Only real options are Taysom Hill or Jimmy G. Who should I go with?
Taysom Hill. And I can tell you this from personal experience. Had a very similar type question for myself in a league where I've got Aaron Rodgers. And I just think the upside of the rushing ability that Taysom Hill provides makes you want to lean towards him over a guy like Jimmy G, and really makes him kind of the top guy available this week, knowing that he's going to start. And you have to understand the risk is maybe he gets a re-injury, maybe he doesn't play well, and so then they put in Simeon to close out the game. But I think the high ceiling is what I like to chase at quarterback, even against the Dallas Cowboys. I think it's going to be this offense is going to be very Taysom Hill centric this week or tonight, really.
Jalen Hurts has proven over the last couple of years that if a guy can use his legs effectively, he doesn't need to be a very good thrower to earn a lot of points in fantasy.
yeah, Jalen Hurts, he'll throw for 100 yards and run for 3 touchdowns and you know, not have a bad game, but from a fantasy perspective, still score you 20, 25 points. And so that's you know, that certainly is kind of an equalizer, I would say, from the quarterback position for sure.
JD, somebody's just sending the simple question, will CeeDee Lamb play tonight? How confident are you there?
I'm extremely confident. He cleared concussion protocol on Saturday, so I would expect that he is going to go in really what is a very important game for the Dallas Cowboys on this little skid that they're on, you know, other than the beatdown of the Atlanta Falcons. And so I think that they need to get back. I think the biggest question really comes down to Amari Cooper with that team. I think CeeDee Lamb will go, and I think Amari Cooper won't. Now, Amari did get taken off of the COVID list, so you know, that's a little bit reassuring, but again, unvaccinated and has been on the COVID list for 10 days. And apparently, you know, the reports are that he's still feeling some effects from it. And when you go for 10 days, not only without playing football, but also being as sick as COVID can make you, maybe you lose some weight, your legs aren't quite under you. I think it's really dangerous to play a guy like Amari Cooper, even though you're in a game that you really kind of have to win if you're the Dallas Cowboys. To stop that skid. So, but I don't expect Amari to go, and I do expect CeeDee Lamb to go. I think Cedric Wilson, who hasn't been practicing the last couple of days, is probably going to be out, which could be an uptick for Michael Gallup and, yeah. You know, maybe Noah Brown and some of those guys and Dalton Schultz. But from the simple question, you know, I'm sorry for the long-winded answer, but yeah, I do think that CeeDee is going to go. I'm a lot more confident in CeeDee than I am in Amari Cooper.
RB2, James Conner, Daryl Henderson, or Elijah Mitchell?
So, and you're going to have to think about this as well. Daryl Henderson's dealing with a quad injury, and they think that he's going to go, so you'll monitor that. But either way, I think that the way that James Conner has been running the ball with Chase Edmonds out, the amount of goal line carries he's getting, even with Kyler Murray coming back, that could open some things up for him. So, I like Daryl Henderson this week. I really, I'm a big fan this week, though, of James Conner.
All right, JD, somebody in the PPR league has a couple quick ones. First of all, tight end, Pitts or Goddard?
Yuck. I'm going to go with Pitts because I think he has more capable throwing quarterback, even though they've both been pretty darn average as of late. The upside of Pitts is still greater than with Goddard.
Okay, and then flex, Gibson, Montgomery, Judy, or Van Jefferson?
Gibson. I think with J.D. McKissic also getting hurt in the game, and it looked like it might have been a really bad like knee injury or something, but then I think they kind of reported he got hit in the head, and so I don't know if it was concussion-type stuff, neck. I think it was neck. But, he's probably going to be sparingly played this week if he even goes. And so I just think that with him being out, Gibson's going to see even more of an uptick in touches.
PPR league, Jamar Chase or CeeDee Lamb?
Oh, man, that one's tough because I like both those guys. I would lean towards CeeDee Lamb tonight just because I think the Cowboys are that often going to have to really run through him. Zeke's a little bit banged up even though he's not on the injury report. The Saints are number one against running backs. They're best rushing defense in the NFL. And so while I do think the Cowboys will be able to run the ball a little bit, I think that most of this offense is going to have to go through CeeDee. Now, I don't know if he's going to be facing, if he's going to be facing shadow coverage from from Lattimore. And so, that's the only thing to really keep your eye on. But it's a total toss-up. I would lean CeeDee just because I think the Dallas offense is a little bit better than Cincinnati, even though the Bengals have been pretty darn good lately.
All right, last one for me, JD. This says, should I sit DK Metcalf for Kendrick Bourne?
No.
Okay.
Don't do it.
And then
I totally get the question. DK, goes three without a single target in the game last week, and Eskridge is getting some playing time. So, and DK is questionable. So you don't have to make that decision now. But assuming that DK is active and playing, you can't bench him for a guy like Bourne.
And then a flex, Ramondre Stevenson or Rashad Bateman.
Oh boy, they're very similar to me, and it is full point PPR.
They don't say.
Assuming it's full point per reception, I would probably lean towards Bateman as being a little bit safer of a floor, which I would want in that situation. We still just, it looks like a 50-50 split with Damian Harris, but we still don't know that that's what Belichick's going to do when he comes into the game, and we never really do. And so Ramondre Stevenson, while I like him as a dart throw, I don't think that he's as safe as Bateman, and so I would lean Bateman.
JD, last question has nothing to do with fantasy football. How cool was it to get to see the Texas basketball team play a game at Gregory in front of nothing but students?
It was really cool. It was really cool. I wish it could have gone. More fun, but it was a lot of fun to watch on TV. And have you guys seen the viral video that's going around of the Hawaiian shirt?
Yeah, that is so freaking cool. I love that.
It's so cool. It's so cool. And that's the kind of stuff that I love to see more than anything. Not only are these guys, you know, building chemistry as they go on and off the court, Beard does stuff like this that makes it even better for the fans and for the students and just gets them all to buy in even more. And I'm hoping that we see about 50 Hawaiian shirt guys at the next home game.
That is J.D. Lewis, fantasy football stuff. If you didn't get your question answered or you just thought of a new one, at J.D. Lewis FF for fantasy football. He's thinking about fantasy football as much or more than you are. Trust us. J.D., best of luck this week, man. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Thank you. See ya.
Thanks,
good
J.D.
stuff. The man's thinking fantasy football all the time, trying to help everybody out, even the Tent City Hobos. One guy that probably doesn't care about the Tent City Hobos is Paul Wadlington. I don't know if we've ever, have we ever asked him if he cares about your fantasy team? I'm guessing he doesn't.
I mean, nobody does.
Yeah.
So other than me, my wife definitely doesn't. My kids hate my fantasy team. Yeah, Paul doesn't care about my fantasy team.
That's actually a good name for a fantasy team. My kids hate my fantasy team. That's a good one. Paul Wadlington, Scipio Text coming up at 105. Up next, though, in the crap bag, I will send my best to a big-time sports figure that now is battling COVID. Tell you who it is on the horn.
Shirts and skins.
Uh-oh.
You never told me I'd take a fall.
Uh-oh.
Mirror, mirror.
Trey, you got a guess on this one?
Diana Ross.
That's who I was going to guess.
It's her.
There we go. Well done.
Nice. I don't know how I got that. A name just popped into my head.
When I was little, see, Isaiah, you're not old enough to remember this. Trey, are you old enough to remember when Diana did the concert in Central Park in the rain?
Yes.
I thought she was going to be electrocuted live on stage. Like, I was a kid, I thought, oh my God, and the wind was blowing, and the rain was coming sideways, and you could see the lightning, and Diana just stood out on that stage and said, we're gonna make it together, here's a song called whatever it was. I'm like, Diana, you could die!
Boy, how hopped up was she on something?
Oh, she was ready to roll. That concert could have been powered by Coke. You might be right. You might be right. What's this one called, Isaiah?
Mirror, mirror.
Mirror, mirror. Diana Ross, the great Diana Ross. A lot of people thought Dirty Diana by Michael Jackson was about Diana Ross. I don't think that was ever confirmed. Much like the Dave Coulier thing can't ever get confirmed unless Bob Saget will do it for us today. But I don't know that we ever had that confirmed.
Wasn't it about a woman named Diana who tried to pin a kid on him?
I don't know. Is that part of it? Billie Jean was trying to pin the kid on him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But the kid is not my son. That's Billie Jean.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Dirty Diana was just a complicated relationship, from what I could tell. That's my favorite Michael Jackson track.
Michael Jackson and Diana Ross? That porn tape ever gets out there?
Oh, come on.
I know y'all are the big porn guys on this show.
How dare you.
I'd watch that one.
How dare
you. Oh, I'd take a peek, too. For sure. Motown Legends, that's what they call it.
The Motown Showdown. That's what that would be.
I mean, that's not even bumping uglies at that point. That's just bumping pretties, considering just how good they both are at moving.
Kind of depends on when it would have been filmed, but yeah, they would have. If they're both in their prime, I mean, okay. Diana Ross was in her prime for a long time. Diana Ross was a good-looking woman for a long stretch in the 80s, 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
She could shake it, too.
She could. It's a beautiful woman, a very talented woman as well, Miss Diana Ross.
I wonder what the moonwalk looks like in that situation. Like, if he has a version of the moonwalk.
Come on, man.
Like the horizontal moonwalk.
You are literally the only person who's ever asked that question, including people in bed with Michael Jackson.
Well, I'm also wondering some much sicker things that I'm not going to say into the microphone right now.
Don't wonder any of those. Just ask Bob Saget the next time you interview him. That's coming up at 2 o'clock, part 3 of the Bob Saget interview. And it will start with the Dave Coulier question. I cannot wait for that. Right now, though, let's get you a little crap bag. I'll tell you who's got COVID.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, Just think of a bag of crap.
It's brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. This is kind of ironic for me because it is one of the early sports heroes of COVID, I would argue, that now has COVID. And unfortunately, that is Dana White, the president of the UFC. It might surprise you to know that Dana White is vaccinated. Which, if you think about it, Trey, that's not that shocking considering all the protocols they had to put in place. He travels to all those events, going to Fight Island, going to UAE, going to, you know, even if it's just the Apex Center there in Vegas, Dana is at every single fight. So it was going to make sense for him to get vaccinated.
And he was the first one leaning back into that when everybody else was uncertain about how to continue forward. Dana White was having these in-person events and literally kissing these guys on the cheek after weigh-in.
And there were people that ripped him and tried to rip him a new one and said he was being irresponsible, and they put together a pretty darn good record what they were doing.
Absolutely. You have to give him a lot of credit, because I may have even been a little bit critical with how quickly they were getting back to that, but ultimately he was proven right.
They found a way to do it. So it's a guy that you could assume is pretty versed on kind of what was going on with COVID, hopefully the latest information, how to try to keep everybody safe. So Dana White, it would also not surprise us, he went to a friend of his that had COVID. The friend's name is Joe Rogan. He did what I did when I got COVID, which is go to a friend who has a badass podcast and see what he went through. I talked to you. You'd had COVID by then, right?
Yes.
So I wanted to know.
And you took the advice that I did, just like Dana White took Joe Rogan's advice. Now, my advice was just sweat it out. Right. Joe Rogan's advice was throw the kitchen sink at it. Thankfully, we're not having to hear about Dana White taking horse dewormer, even though he did take ivermectin. I'm guessing because he was vaccinated, a big deal is not being made out of that, even though there is obviously a human version of ivermectin.
That's right.
That's what humans take, that has won a Nobel Peace Prize. He took a bunch of stuff and is giving credit to the monoclonal antibodies, I think, as much as anything else, for helping him get over it as quickly as he did. I mean, he's apparently in the middle of his 10-day window of not being able to do much, and he says he's already working out every day.
Yeah, that's great news. Glad to hear that he's feeling better, and maybe, you know, if there are any serious symptoms, we haven't really heard about that. He says he's felt pretty good. So you mentioned the antibody treatment. He had something called a NAD drip.
N-A-D.
N-A-D drip.
N-A-D drip, yeah.
I should have spelled that out, because if you say it, it sounds much worse. Something,
yeah, drippy NADs are not good.
Something called a vitamin drip. And then, like you mentioned, a dose of ivermectin. We would assume, like you said, the human version of that, which generally when prescribed is for like intestinal parasites and worms and things like that.
Yes.
But and there are studies going on right now of people taking ivermectin for COVID. I don't think we have enough information back on if they can really make any connections as to what's happening. But the most important thing is to not take a whole lot of that necessarily. Talk to a doctor, talk to somebody you trust about that if you're going through it. I don't know if throwing a bunch of that at COVID is a good idea, but Dana did, Trey, what I do sometimes with vitamin C. If I feel a little sniffle coming on, I'll take way too much vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, he and Joe Rogan talked and went with four different things at one time.
Yeah, supposedly the prophylactic method is the way to take ivermectin. I don't know if it truly works or not. There are countries that do swear by it. I think Japan is one of the most recent to come out and say, we were able to keep hospitalizations and deaths low, even though we had a rise in cases, because we started prescribing ivermectin to people. I think there's regions in India, maybe even down in Mexico as well, that swear by it. But the evidence right now looks more anecdotal than anything else. What we're seeing in the clinical setting is suggesting that it doesn't have that big of an impact. But I certainly don't blame anybody for turning to someone who got over it as quickly as a guy like Joe Rogan did, who is talking to medical professionals. It's not like Joe Rogan is just Googling things. He talks to a lot of very knowledgeable people about stuff, and then getting that protocol and utilizing it yourself, much like Aaron Rodgers did. Now, fortunately for Dana White, I guess, because he's vaccinated, he's not being put through the ringer like Aaron Rodgers was. Now, yeah. Aaron Rodgers did lie about things to begin with. He was hiding information.
The deception
so
is part of
it's
it for
a bit,
A-Rod,
it's a bit of an apples to bananas comparison there, but at the end of the day, we hope that anybody who contracts COVID gets better. That includes those that we may not align align with in terms of our opinion on whether or not to get vaccinated and how to treat these things as well.
Absolutely. And obviously a guy like Dana White has had to be so upfront about it, being the head of UFC and going through all the criticism he did, but also the spotlight, because he was one of the only ones at the time. NASCAR also comes to mind. Just very few sports organizations were willing to take the chance. Dana took the shot and said, I think we can figure this out. Give us a chance. And they put together a pretty good record.
The real question is not whether Dana White got vaccinated, Chad.
Yes.
It is now that he's been vaccinated and he's gotten it, so he has natural immunity, whether he chooses to get the booster shot.
Yeah. Will Dana White get the booster? He's also a guy, I don't hang out with Dana White and we're not friends or anything, but he strikes me as a guy that even if he hadn't gone through a four-thing list of medications, I think Dana White might be able to get through COVID pretty well.
That's one thing that I don't think is giving being given enough treatment, no pun intended there, is that I don't think it necessarily takes the kitchen sink being thrown at you, being thrown at the illness for you to come out better on the other side, and sometimes really quickly. You and I didn't take anything, and we got better in just a couple of days, and there are a lot of people that were in our category early on when they didn't have these therapeutic treatments to help you get over this. And the long COVID thing, I think, has been overblown as we get further away from that initial claim. And for everybody that is taking the ivermectin, the NAD drip, the monoclonal antibodies, the vitamin drips, there are a lot of us out there who didn't do any of that, who are okay in sometimes days, weeks, months, and obviously a year after initially catching it.
Yeah, but like you said, we're not going to get on people for how they want to try to take care of themselves, because that is obviously a personal thing of however you think you need to go about it. And we don't know if Dana had, I haven't read if Dana had any symptoms right away. He might have had something that freaked him out right away. He said he had a mild, the loss of smell for a little bit, and that's it. I haven't heard about any serious symptoms. But who knows? Maybe he talked to Rogan, and Rogan's like, dude, just to be sure.
I think he felt a little off, but he said that as soon as he did that, like the next day, he felt completely fine, and he's been doing the workout thing since then.
I'll tell you a guy, as we transition back to another COVID story, Trey, a guy I'm interested to see, I hope I see him tonight as a Cowboys fan, is Amari Cooper. And how is he coming off of this? He's one of those guys that has had a bit of a rough trip with COVID in terms of coming out of it. He's been able to clear the protocol, but it's still lingering. It's still dragging a little bit. And they've said, even as recently as yesterday, a couple days ago, there's still a cough that's hanging around, which you know that's going to make people look and question. And, whoa, what are you doing? Anytime we're in a grocery store now and that lady next to you in the peanut butter aisle coughs, you're running for cover and grabbing masks and everything. And so maybe that's just me. But, that's a part. I want to see, can he play tonight? And then is he Amari Cooper again? Or does he still have a little ramping up to go?
I think it's a great question. I wouldn't be surprised if it maybe takes him these next couple of weeks to get back to full strength.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Real quick, weird fact for tonight. If the Cowboys have an offensive snap where Tyron Smith, Zach Martin, Dak, Zeke, Cooper, and Lamb are all on the field at the same time, it will be the first snap of 2021 that has all of them on the field.
That is crazy.
I did not realize that until I heard that stat. That's nuts.
Yes, it is.
So that could be great news for the Cowboys. Bad news on the Saints side would be Kamara is out. The injury that's kept him out for 4 weeks is keeping him out at least one more. Kamara out. Taysom Hill starting quarterback tonight for the Saints.
Your quarterback is as limited as Taysom Hill is and throwing the football down the field. You need all your weapons at your disposal to beat a team like the Cowboys. I expect Dallas to win this one pretty handily.
Cowboys better get after it at this point. Speaking of that Cowboys game, we're going to pick it. Trey's got an idea this week that we go with another 12-pack picks on Coors Light. We'll start it today with the Cowboys game, but also at 1:30 we'll make our Supreme picks. Supreme Lending, Chris Waters Realty. The Horn team has slipped in the rankings a little bit. We'll try to pick up the slack. Up next, it's Paul Wadlington, Scipio Tex of Inside Texas and On3.com. His thoughts on Lincoln Riley and the Oklahoma situation, Brian Kelly and the new Notre Dame situation, and the Longhorns coming out of 5-7 and trying to take advantage on the recruiting trail, all that Oklahoma stuff. Paul's coming up on the Horn.